Hey everyone, this is Sydney Shute from Victory Condition Gaming, and you're listening to the Victory Condition Gaming Podcast.
Hey everyone, welcome to Victory Condition Gaming. My name is Doug. Today on the show, I'm so excited we have Thomas Harenstam from Free League Publishing on to talk about Things from the Flood, the RPG that is on Kickstarter right now. And also, I have a special co-host, Matthew, from the Coriolis Effect Podcast. Guys, thanks for coming on and chatting about this latest Free League project that's just tearing up Kickstarter.
Thanks for having me on again.
It's always a pleasure. Always a pleasure. Matthew, were you excited when they made this announcement that this was coming up?
But I've got to say, I was a bit less excited than Dave. Dave was very excited because he runs Tales from the Loop for us and kind of resents that he can't kill kids. And so this might have been heaven to him.
Nice.
But I'm a kid, so you know, I fear this this particular release.
Yeah, I was really excited. I thought this would maybe actually show up later on in the year. So when you said it was coming up this soon, I was very, very excited. Cool. Let's talk a little bit about the response for this game. It's been crazy. You launched it and it's got twice, like the first day, it got twice as many backers as Tales from the Loop. That's got to be an awesome sign. Like, you must have been ecstatic with that response, Thomas.
Well, yeah. I mean, you never know these things. I mean, we knew that once we started talking about this Kickstarter, there was a lot of, you know, we noticed that a lot of people got, you know, excited and talked about it. So we felt that, yeah, we have something going here. But you never know what it's gonna turn out like. But it's been fantastic so far. So yeah, really excited.
Yeah, the momentum's just. I'm excited to see where it's gonna end up because I think, you know, at this pace, you should well exceed what Tales from the Loop does. Hopefully, we're gonna cross our fingers. We're not gonna count our chickens before they hatch.
Yeah, we'll see.
That's awesome. And the really great thing is that all the folks that back Tales from the Loop, they're going to get this game in the PDF form already. So you still have that kind of response, even with previous backers getting some sort of form of the content.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, actually, Things from the Flood was started out as a stretch goal in the Tales Kickstarter. But then, so everyone who backed that will get this game as a PDF no matter what. So this Kickstarter is actually for the printed version of Things from the Flood.
Well, that's great. It just shows you how many folks found your game after the original Kickstarter and just loved it, and then they want to continue playing in this universe that Simon has built.
Yeah, I mean, I mean, it's a really good sign, of course, that like you say, people are coming back for a second time around. That means hopefully we did something right the first time.
Sure.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, how many? Can you count how many enemies you won with the first book? I mean, there's
five.
It was crazy. Yeah. Oh, okay, Ken, you have enough. You have enough fingers on one hand to do that.
Yes.
Awesome. No, I'm excited. Yeah, can you tell us what the major differences are between Tales from the Loop and Things from the Flood?
Yeah, sure. I mean, I think the main difference is a difference in tone and theme. I mean, and obviously the setting itself, that we move ahead from the 80s with that kind of, you know, you play younger kids. It's there are mysteries, there's danger, but it's also a fairly friendly atmosphere. Whereas in Things from the Flood, we move into the 90s. The kids are older, they're older teens. The world is changing. It's not as, things are not as clear cut anymore. You don't really know what's right and wrong in the same sense. The world is more dangerous. It's more uncertain. The problems you face in your everyday life are a bit more, you know, serious. And the theme of the mysteries is also a bit darker. There's an element of horror and weirdness in there that perhaps was not so strong in Tales. So it's a shift of tone. There are some rules differences as well, but those are fairly, they are significant, but they're quite few. So it's basically the same core rules. With what the one major difference is that this time you can actually die. Your character can die, which makes a difference. Just that changes things a bit.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay.
I wanted to ask about that. Not so much the death thing, but in Tales from the Loop, when my character gets broken, I go home to Grandma. She makes me some split pea and ham soup. We have that scene. I'm no longer broken. How do I get out of being broken in Things in the Flood?
Well, it's similar to that. I mean, there's still going to be that thing. The main that you can recover from being broken by playing a scene with some form of recovery. It can take different forms. So that part is fairly similar. The difference is that when you get broken, there is a risk of dying this time. We're still tweaking exactly how that's going to work, but it's going to be a similar system to Mutant Year Zero, where you need to sort of succeed at some kind of save roll to actually, because if you don't, you actually risk dying when being broken. So there's the risks are higher simply. So it's kind of like that.
Nice. I love Mutant Year Zero. So like if this is like a hybrid between the two, then then that gives, it's gonna get big thumbs up from me. Now is there? I'm gonna assume there are different archetypes with Things from the Flood compared to Tales from the Loop.
Yeah, there's a bunch of new ones. There's eight that have a bit more of a 90s flavor to them. And also, we're actually planning two more that we just put up as new stretch goals that are not yet unlocked. We just put them out like yesterday, I think. Yep. So if we unlock those, it's going to be 10 new archetypes in the game. That's kind of cool. So the new ones are the outsider and the party animal. They're the ones that we have on right now. But apart from those, we have the rocker, the raver, some, you know, the hacker, a couple of different ones. So yeah, there's quite a few. Yeah.
Now you've said that this book is about, right now it's about 200 pages?
Around, yeah. We don't know if we haven't finished. Layout has started, so we're quite well along, but layout is not finished, so we don't know the final page count exactly. But I would say it's going to be a book in the same kind of size as the Tales from the Loop RPG book, so around that same. So it's about 200 pages.
The book itself has a lot of Simon art in it, and it has a lot of art from his existing book, Things from the Flood. And you said that it has some new art in it as well?
There is some new art. That's quite interesting. I mean, of course, the brand new art from Simon is predominantly it's the cover art. The mainstay of the color art in the book will be pulled from the art book. However, there's also quite a few. This is the way things generally go, that there's quite a few pieces of art that were actually made for the art book around that time for the same project that were never used.
Oh, okay.
So we do have quite a few big pieces of art that are really fantastic that have not been published before that were made for Things from the Flood. So they do fit perfectly into the game. So this is actually a way to get to see those, which are really cool. And then there is some character art that is actually not made by Simon, but by another guy who's called Rainer Rosenberg. He did the character art in our friends, the Machines Compendium. So it fits really well. It's a line art, comic book style art that works well with Simon's art, I think. So he's doing the archetypes, for example, and the NPC images for the scenarios.
I had a question, though, and I ask this on behalf of your listeners, Doug, who might not have already played Tales from the Loop. I just want to clarify this with you, Thomas. This isn't just an extension to Tales from the Loop, is it? It's a standalone game as well. So if people kick in on this, they don't need to get Tales from the Loop, although that would be wonderful, obviously. Can play the game on its own.
That's right. That's the way we're calling it a standalone expansion. So it's an expansion in the sense that it expands the universe, expands the game with new archetypes and new, you know, expanded setting. But yeah, it's a fully standalone game. So you do not need Tales from the Loop to play Things from the Flood. It's completely standalone.
Nice. But if you wanted to like kind of carry on your character from Tales from the Loop, from the Loop into the then you could.
You can. You can keep playing the same characters as their older selves. That's entirely possible. And we're also actually working on a string of scenarios where you can actually, there is some time travel and stuff involved, so you could actually move between the two settings. We haven't, you know, I would almost spoil stuff, but there could be some things like that to combine the two. Yeah,
that's very neat. I like that. I like that idea. So with this campaign, you've unlocked so many stretch goals already. That rocker pledge. Anybody that has messaged me that says, oh, I've looked at this. What do you think is the best pledge for this? And I'm telling them, you can't go wrong with that rocker pledge, because before it's all said and done, that is going to be an awesome pledge. You've unlocked maps,
yep,
a dice tray, a yep, GM screen. Like so many more mysteries, and by the time it's all said and done, there's probably going to be dice included in this. And Like, that is a crazy, crazy value. Plus, you've got a campaign book that you've already, like, unlocked as a print. So folks are going to get two books instead of just one.
Yep.
Like,
yeah, it's, you know, the better it goes, the more that rocker is going to be, you know, the more you get for the same pledge. And that goes for all the, even the ones beyond that as well, of course, the hacker. But yeah, the rocker is definitely... I think good value for money, and it's just going to keep getting better the further along we get.
And that's I'm going to tell folks I think I've backed every single Kickstarter from Free League except for maybe the first two, the Mutant Year Zero and Gen Lab Alpha. But I've never been disappointed with my Kickstarter rewards or anything that you guys are great on Kickstarter. I say this every time you come on, but I just like to repeat it to anybody that might not like. Free League is one of those companies that does a great job with Kickstarter. They keep the communication going even afterwards. They want to make sure that you're happy with the games that you receive. They send you high quality stuff. I would say this even if you weren't on, Thomas. I can't stress it enough that there's a reason why you keep having so much success on that platform, and it's awesome to see you do very, very well.
Thanks.
Talking about production, what I love about what you've done is every book, every game system has a slightly different production quality to it. So when I didn't back Tales from the Loop, I must admit, I picked that up at my friendly local gaming store. But when I picked that up, the matte pages compared to the gloss pages of Coriolis, it's still really high quality, but there's a feel to the book that puts it in the game world. Is there anything going to be different production-wise, to differentiate Things in the Flood from Tales from the Loop?
That's a good question. I mean, it's something that we really consider every time we make a new game. I mean, and obviously the game, the text and the art, I mean, that's the most important thing, but the production values and the kind of, I mean, the feel you get from the book itself is also important, like we did Forbidden Lands. We wanted to get that, you know, like the book should feel like an old tome, so we made the book with like uncoated cream colored paper with only black and white print, and then these leather covers, and so you get that kind of feeling. And for Tales, we wanted it also has like a bit of a cream color, bit like an older book, like to get that sort of retro feel to it. And whereas for Coriolis, we wanted something that was like really, you know, brought out that art in the best possible way. So in every book, we try to sort of tweak how we print, what kind of paper we use, and all of those things to get the feel of the game across. I mean, for Things, we are at least, we haven't started printing yet, but the plan for now is it will be quite similar in that regard to the Tales book. We're not planning any major differences apart from there's going to be a difference in the color scheme. I think there's already a spread or two on the Kickstarter where you can see how it differs a little bit from Tales. But in terms of paper quality and these things, we're probably going to stay pretty close to Tales from the Loop.
Now, my question is for this campaign book that you've unlocked. I forget to write down when you expect a delivery date on this Kickstarter.
It's February, and you know, that should be fine. And it's always, you know, it's always tricky to because when you set the date, it's before the Kickstarter starts, so you don't know how much work you'll actually have, because you'll only know that when the Kickstarter is over, depending on how much you unlocked. So there's always that, but it should be fine. I mean, because where we are now with the main book, it's all done, it's all translated, it's proofread, and it's being laid out right now. The campaign book, the extra campaign book that we're doing, that is not finished yet. So that's, of course, a bit more uncertain, but if we need to, it'll have to ship later separately. We'd like to ship everything at once, but if that book, the bonus book, is not finished by February, we'll need to ship it separately at a later time, just like we did for the Tales Kickstarter, because many of those stretch goals were actually then included into our friends the Machines compendium that was released some months later, and we shipped it to backers separately at a later time. So that could happen this time. It depends a little bit on how things go with those bonus mysteries that we unlocked.
Let's see here. I've got a couple of questions in the chat. This is Cenobite asks, will it use new settings outside of the Sweden Boulder locations from the Loop? And does it still use the particle accelerator as the core concept for the weirdness?
Yeah, what was the first question there about other other
settings? This is it, will it use new settings outside of out of the Sweden Boulder locations from
I mean the game itself, the book will continue both of those settings. So there's going to be a new chapter on the Swedish setting and a new chapter on the US, the American setting, and those are going to be evolved into the 1990s. So they'll be focused on what's different from the original 80s setting. So those two will be part of the game. As far as other settings than those, I mean, we did the UK setting in Our Friends the Machines. Yeah, that's not going to be, and we won't update that as part of the core book, but that's definitely something we'd like to do in some form, and it could come along perhaps in that separate book. We'll see. That's not a definite just yet, but then, of course, I mean, like for the Tales game, you could, you know, there is definitely support for making your own setting as well, based on where you live or where you want to set the game. As for that other question about the loop and the particle accelerator, yeah, that's certainly still part, but a bit of a different way, because what's happened since the 80s and moving into the 90s is that the loop has actually closed down. So it's not an active operation anymore. However, that doesn't stop strange things from happening around the loop. It's actually a bit even more weirdness going on since it's officially closed, but then it's like, is it really closed, or is there still stuff going on down there in that old closed, you know, supposedly closed complex? So there's definitely a lot of stuff focused around that and connected to that sort of the weirdness is focused on in things as well.
Nice.
I've got to ask about that actually. I reading about Things from the Flood, I was struck by a thing that probably Doug isn't going to get here, but there's a subtext of that us Europeans can understand, of moving from a centralized, socialized electricity generation, big science, to a privatized world, which I kind of read happened for you guys in Sweden in the 90s. I think for us in the UK, it kind of happened in the 80s. But of course, it never happened at all in the US, because they've always been privatized. So I'm just wondering how difficult was it to write? I know you got an American author, I think, involved in the Boulder setting, but how difficult was it to make the Boulder setting plug into those sort of deeper themes?
Yeah, there is a bit of that. You're really onto something there, because that's part of the going back to Simon's art books, the shift between Tales and Things had a lot to do with that. And I mean, what's happened in the Swedish setting is that the government agency they used to run the loop, it was a government-owned agency, just like in actual 80s, the telephone company, the electricity company, all of that was just one. It was like the government-run agency that controlled all of those things. Whereas in moving into the 90s in Sweden, all of these things tended to be privatized. So that old system was broken up. And this is reflected in the art book and the Swedish setting, in the sense that the government agency that ran the loop is now shut down, and the loop has been taken over. What's left of the loop has been taken over by a private corporation. So that really, I mean, that's part of the shift between those two things. Like you say, planting that into the US doesn't quite work in the same way, because there was never that shift in the same sense. So that means that you don't get quite exactly that same thing happening there, but I think it still works pretty well, because there are still things happening, just sort of the general closing down of the loop and what happens around that still works. And it's still in the case of the Boulder setting for Tales, it was still controlled by a government agency, like DARPA. So there is still that thing, and now it's been sold off into private hands. So it doesn't quite key into that overall change in society, maybe in the same way in the U.S. setting, but it still works as a game setting, I think.
Yeah, that's totally. I you're right. I kind of went over my head with. I didn't realize that was an issue. Yeah.
Yeah.
Don't worry. We don't expect you Doug. Yeah. It's a thing that's close to our hearts as taxpayers in both of our countries to sell off our assets like that. But you know, we'll let it slide for you guys.
Midnight Blue asks, on the Kickstarter page, I just posted a mixtape CD soundtrack, but nowhere near an exhaustive list. Any chance we will see another campaign / story inspiration based on song titles?
Yeah, I mean, those are really good. I mean, those are written by Nils Hintze, who's the, you know, the main writer for Tales and Things as well. He did that mixtape of mysteries, like short mysteries based on popular 80s songs. Yep. We have discussed doing something similar for, you know, 90s songs, obviously, and that might very well happen. So we'll see, you know. Yeah.
Very cool. Here's one question that I got asked quite a few times, and I don't know. I'm going to spring it on you, and if you can't answer it, that's totally fine. I know that this campaign isn't even ended yet, but folks are already clamoring to know whether or not the Electric State is going to be another expansion of this role-playing system that you've established with Tales from the Loop. Is that on your radar at all yet?
Yeah, it's a good question. I've seen it around. We haven't really answered it, and because we don't really know. So now, I mean, the short answer is, yeah, I mean, we'd love at some point to turn Electric State into a game as well. That'd be, you know, we have some cool ideas about that. It would be a different kind of game, though, because it doesn't have Electric State, doesn't have that. There is no everyday life left. It's more of an apocalyptic or post-apocalyptic world. So there would not be that thing where you go from the everyday life into solving mysteries. It would be more of a post-apocalyptic road trip. And the game would have to be more along those lines as well. Now, I think that would be really cool.
It would be very cool.
Yeah, but at the moment we don't have. I mean, for legal reasons, we don't have the possibility to do that just now. At least not the way things stand. It's not a, you know, we'll see what happens. But at the moment, because as you may have known, the movie rights for the Electric State have been, you know, sold off. And along those went also game rights, which means we cannot, specifically make a game without, it could still work out, though.
Yeah,
so it's not a shut. The door is not shut, but it's also not something we're working on right now at the moment.
I knew that the movie rights were. I didn't realize that with the movie rights, the game rights also kind of transferred.
It's not super clear cut, but at least at the moment, it's not something we're actively working on. But you know, it could still happen. Yeah, we'll see.
All right, You know, people are asking, so I figured I'd ask.
But for now, we're very busy with the Tales. And no matter what, the legal situation, we wouldn't be working on it at the moment because we still have too much to do already.
Well, you've got, let's talk a little bit about the previous, the stuff that you have in the pipelines for coming up in this next few months. You've got Forbidden Lands.
Yep.
I'm eagerly waiting for that to come through my letterbox.
I know. It should have been shipped by now, but there have been some delays in the final production of things. There are so many different pieces that we have, like making dice over here, game master screen here, cards here, books there, and everything, just getting everything together. Just if there is a small delay somewhere, it sort of affects everything else. And it has meant that we're a bit behind, but now everything is being printed, being produced, and it's all a matter of just finishing that, shipping everything to the main warehouse, packing it to backers, and shipping it off. So there is no more. Actually, it's out of our hands now. Now it's more to the print shops and factories and you know, all of that. But that said, it's definitely going to start shipping out in a few weeks. I mean, 2-3 weeks, something like that. It should start showing up in mailboxes.
That's very awesome. I'm very excited. I've read the PDFs that you've sent out and just dug right into them. Actually, I took them on vacation with me, and that was what I read on my plane trips. And I was just like, I can't wait for these to get in my hands.
Yeah, they're gonna feel. I just know they're gonna feel lovely, and they're gonna come in that small, traditional retro Swedish style as well, which catch a lot of us in the States and in the UK a little bit by surprise. I'm sure there are some backers out there that don't realize the size they're going to be, but I'm really looking forward to it.
Yeah, it's a bit, yeah, it's true. It's a bit smaller size than the standard, like the US letter size. These are a bit smaller and to fit into the box. And that, you know, that happens to be the size that Swedish RPGs used to have back in the 80s. It's probably going to be completely lost on, you know, the rest of the world, but still we're sticking to that. So. I really do think for Forbidden Lands, it's really sort of getting the feel of the books, just sort of the texture of it. It's because those are black and white art, which black and white art on a computer screen doesn't really work that well. But in these books, with, you know, feeling the texture of the paper, and then it's a whole different thing. So I think it really comes into its own when you actually have the physical book for Forbidden Lands.
Nice.
And of course you've got Emissary Lost shortly following that parcel, I hope, through our letterboxes as well.
I know it's going to be a busy, you know, it's going to be quite a few things showing up from us if you backed our Kickstarter, so in the next few weeks and possibly a month or so. Emissary Lost is coming along nicely. It's done, it's being printed. We're just going to having the final look at the print files, and then we're going to ship them off. So it takes a few weeks to get it printed, and then that's going to start shipping as well. So it's it's a little bit delayed as well. So it might ship late October or maybe slip into November, but it's coming along really nicely as well, along with a few bonus scenarios that went with that as well. There's two separate printed scenarios that come along with that. So it's going to be a lot of books.
That's great. Now, one of the things, actually just coming back to things in the Flood, one of the things that's really impressed me, I've never played Mutant Year Zero, so I've got to say I know nothing about that.
You need to get on that, man.
Well, Dave and I used to game at school, but we now live on opposite sides of the capital. So that's his midweek group that he runs that with, and I've never been part of that. But he did, you know, I remember him phoning me up and saying, "You've got to back Coriolis. This is going to be great." So that's where I join. But it's really fascinating to see how one of the things I love about Coriolis is, for me, it was a simple tactical system. I really love the combat system in Coriolis, you know, fast playing and it and yet descriptive, and it does loads of things. Forbidden Lands, by being more retro, is also more crunchy, and I love that. It didn't twig, though, until I actually started playing Tales from the Loop, that you've managed, with the same basic system, to turn that into an entirely player-facing game. I think even Dave was caught by surprise. At the end of the first scenario we ran, I said, "Dave, you didn't roll the dice at all. We did all the dice rolls." And so I just wonder whether, Things in the Flood going to carry on with that very player-facing feel, or is the GM going to get to roll the dice in the updated rules?
The rules and things will be fairly close to Tales, so it's going to have that same core system. And I think you're right, it's interesting. I mean, the core engine, so to speak, I wrote that for Mutant Year Zero back in, you know, it's 4 years ago or something now, and then we adapted it for Coriolis, which I also wrote the rules for. But then Nils Hintze, the main writer for Tales from the Loop, he actually did the adaption of the rules. So we had a lot of talk back and forth on how to actually do that. But he came up with these core concepts and turned it into this player-facing version that I think really works well in Tales, that has a different feel. It's less crunchy. It's more a system where one roll resolves an entire situation. So it's not really, doesn't even have a combat system in the normal sense of the word. It's more of a conflict resolution, one roll conflict resolution system that is in the hands of the players. And that works well because it's not a game where you sort of shoot robots with guns so much. It's more about, you know, you roll for other things. So I think it works really well. And Things from the Flood, even though it has some changes, it's staying fairly close to the Tales rule set. Yeah.
That's really cool. I mean, I think one of the things that's made it so popular is I was at Dragon Meet last year, and in an indie games seminar, and somebody was saying, you know, what's the best thing that's happened in indie? and one guy, you know, held up your book and said, this is the best indie game. Now, I think all game companies, except for perhaps Hasbro's Wizards of the Coast, and you could argue, I guess, Fantasy Flight with Asmodee behind them, but everybody else, I think, is an indie game. But it was, you know, that shocked and pleased people in the audience that this really nice hardback book from, you know, as far as they're concerned, actually really from Modiphius. A lot of people didn't realize it came from you guys, you know, but from quite a big brand here in the UK, was being counted as an indie game. But I think there's some of that indie game feel in the player-facing nature of it.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I mean, I think me personally, I was, I mean, I was heavily into indie gaming back when, you know, that was, you know, all the rage. It's quite some years ago now. And I still think there's a lot of stuff from indie games that did, you know, did things right and brought and you know, gave us, you know, new things of viewing and playing role-playing games and sort of brought a lot of good things to the table. And I think that so that definitely carries into all of our games. There is definitely indie influences, I would say, definitely Mutant Year Zero, other games as well. And I think perhaps Tales is the most, especially since Nils is also a, you know, heavy indie player. I think that's perhaps the most indie of our games if you look at game mechanics and so on. But it's definitely there in the background in all of our games.
We've got a VIP commentator right now, Estella Herrenstam. Does anybody know? I don't. She's saying hi, Dad. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. Hi, Stella. Hi, Max.
That's great.
They're in the other room.
Oh, yeah. That's great.
Are they playing? Are they old enough to play Tales?
Oh, yeah. That's a great question.
Yeah, actually, I did play with them and some friends of theirs in the same age. They're 9 and 11. So we played. I played with them and two others, so four kids, just in the, you know, a couple of weeks back in the summer at our summer house. We played the first scenario in the Tales from the Loop book, the summer break and killer birds scenario, and it worked really well. It was fantastic, a lot of fun. I mean, they're sort of 9 is sort of on the young end, but I think that worked fine. 11 is, you know, great age for, you know, works really well for this game. Yeah. I mean, I think that's one of the cool things about the game, that you can play it definitely as an adult, and you can also play it, you know, I mean, with it's an easy game for a lot of people to play their own way. I mean, if you play it as an adult, you might, you know, go a bit deeper into like the heavy side of things, whereas you play with kids, you focus on the mystery solving and the fun stuff. So you can tweak the tone a little bit, but it works for both, I think.
Of course, there's a bit of a challenge there in that your kids don't know the 80s, so
I know that was kind of fun because it was like, you know, they had to ask me and you know, my wife and the others that were around. So okay, so what was actually, you know, to learn the setting of the game, they had to ask what was things like when you were a kid, Dad. It's like, no, there was no YouTube. Really, no YouTube.
No, cell phones, no nothing.
No cell phones. Yeah, so we sort of had to, you know, educate them about, you know, the way things used to be. Or
yeah, library.
Exactly. So it was quite, you know, quite a weird thing to you know, learn a game setting that way, but fun. Yeah.
No, absolutely, absolutely. Well, I mean, the 80s, that whole genre is like, it's kind of popular now. So kids, even though they didn't grow up in it, they're getting more and more exposed to it because, like, people, it's like we're seeing like a lot of movies that reference the 80s. And so it's not like it's not totally not foreign to them, but yet they didn't grow up in it. So let's talk a little bit about Crusader Kings, the board game before we sign off here too much. Production's going well on that.
Yeah, I was just writing an update right now. I had to break it off to get on your show here, so I'll finish.
Oh, I'm sorry.
That's
sorry,
okay.
Sorry, Crusader Kings backers. I apologize for
No, I mean, we've been a bit quiet on that front, but that's because we've been waiting to get a new prototype, a new printed prototype where we updated everything, and now we just got that the other week, and we're play testing it just to get everything. Because I mean, board games, I mean, RPGs need playtesting too, but board games, I mean, they are, you know, they need to be super balanced in a way that an RPG is more flexible. You can sort of, as a game master, there is more leeway of you know, so it's, but at a board game, you have to sort of, it has to be very thoroughly tested many times. So that's where we are at now, you know, just making sure it's balanced. And also we've started production of, and because of the thing that takes the longest time to make are the, you know, the miniatures, the plastic miniatures. So that's moving ahead. And then we're just finishing everything up. So yeah, we're gonna have a playtest session tomorrow with the people from Paradox, the license owners.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, so I hope they like it. Yeah. Absolutely. So yeah, we're doing that. So
very cool, very cool. And you have, I know you can't really, do you have any other, don't give me any specifics. Are there any other board game on the horizon for Free League?
Yeah, there is. We have ideas. Nothing. I think there's quite a few of sort of concepts, ideas that we'd like to do, and that we have sort of just started sketching on. Okay. But we're not into production on any other board game at the moment.
Okay.
Quite a few other role playing games, though. We're working on actively at the moment that I'll be happy to talk to you about a little bit later.
Sure, yeah. Sure. You're always welcome to come on, and I love having you on. I know Matthew and I are both big fans of everything that you guys are doing, and you have a great team, and like I said, you're doing everything very well, and I'm so glad to see all the success for you over these last few years.
Thank you.
Matthew, do you have any more closing? Do you have any more questions before we start signing off?
I guess I don't. I was going to briefly mention Vampire 5, which, of course,
that's right.
You guys did the design on, but you haven't really got much to say about that, I'm sure.
Yeah, we're actually working on the design, the graphic design for one of the expansions for that game, the Camarilla Clan book. So that's also something we're doing, working on right now. But that's only the graphic design, so we're not part of the sort of content work there. That's all on White Wolf.
It was really great to see your logo in there on the credits page.
It's a fun project.
I was at a convention, a couple weeks ago, and Vampire was brought up, and they just raved about how beautiful that book is and what the quality of that book. They're like, one guy said he bought three copies.
It's a very cool book. I mean, strong community with a lot of strong opinions, so it's an interesting field to get into, but yeah, I mean, it's been a lot of fun to work with White Wolf, and we like the way it turned out, so that's good stuff.
Are you going to be at any conventions or anything coming up?
Yeah, we are going, let's see, I mean, we're going to the Swedish Book Fair, the main Swedish Book Fair. That's just next week, but that's just nice. But it's a thing because we do books as well, art books, literature and stuff. We go to Essen. Late October, right? Yep. We won't have our own booth there. We'll be with Paradox Interactive for the board games mainly. But we'll probably have Forbidden Lands there to show off. Mm-hmm. And we're thinking maybe going to Dragon Meet as well.
You want to come to Dragon Meet?
Yeah, we were there. I was there. We launched Mutant Year Zero there actually in 2014. Mm-hmm. So we're thinking maybe going this year with Forbidden Lands, because that's going to be just the perfect time. The game will be out and everything. So we're not, we haven't nothing settled, but I'd like to, and hopefully we can do that.
Nice.
Yeah, that's
nice.
Brilliant. We're hoping to run a Forbidden Lands tournament for you guys.
Oh yeah, I heard something about that. That'd be awesome. Ooh, yeah.
Very neat. Very neat. Thomas, where can folks find Free League and your company online if folks want to learn more about your games?
Well, the easiest way is just freeleaguepublishing.com, freeleaguepublishing.com, or just, if you want to check out the Kickstarter, of course, that's just search for Things from the Flood on Kickstarter, and you'll find that. And Facebook, we're on Facebook if you want to follow us there as well.
Excellent. And usually there's Facebook groups for almost every single game that you put out now at this point.
I think so. Yeah. I mean, we're there, but we don't run them, which I think is a good thing. They're completely, community created and run by the community, but we're there and we try to sort of be present and answer questions and so on. But yeah, I think you're right. I think there is a Facebook group and the Google Plus community for at least Coriolis, I know. So.
Yeah, definitely there for Forbidden Lands as well.
Yeah, right. Yes, there is. Yes. All right.
Matthew, where can folks find you and the Coriolis Effect if they want to?
Well, I guess my favorite link to give out now is go to podchaser.com/the Coriolis Effect. And you'll find a flavor of us for whatever podcatcher you've got at Podchaser.
Nice.
Leave a review as well. We want more reviews, so leave a review on Podchaser.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And you'll be at Dragon Meet as well?
Well, definitely, yeah. We've already been invited as part of the Podcast Zone, which is a thing that Dragon Me run. And as I say, we're talking with Nilsson, with the guys at Podcast Zone, to make one of the activities that we do there a generate your character and then send them into, we haven't quite got the setting, but it's going to be some sort of slave pit from somewhere, and see how long they survive.
Yeah.
That's great. I like that. I like that a lot. And you guys always have the greatest events over there. I can't. One of these times, I'm going to have to get over there and go to all these amazing events.
You guys have got Gen Con. Don't start being jealous about a one-day event in London.
Yeah.
I mean,
Gen Con was great. We're going to Gen Con, of course, next year, but that's some time off, so that's why I didn't mention it. But Gen Con, for sure. We had a good time this year, but next year is going to be a bigger, we hope we get a bigger booth and bigger presence, for sure.
Nice.
Yeah. And some more awards. Because this year you're not getting any awards.
I know. Yeah. No awards. No, not a single award. It's horrible.
Oh, man. Well, I think it kind of made up for the previous year when, like, I think poor Chris, I think, had to keep going to back up.
Yeah. So I had to see that on YouTube, which is, it was fun.
That's got to be gutting. Got to be gutting.
A little bit.
I mean, Chris is a lovely guy, but watch him go and get your rewards all the time. You think we could have been there.
Yeah, that's actually kind of where we said, man, we have to go next year. Of course, not to pick up awards, but just we felt that we can't stay away from Gen Con anymore. So from now on, we'll be there.
All right, folks, that's going to do it for us for today. I want to thank everybody for tuning in. This has been Victory Condition Gaming, because winning shouldn't be the only victory condition when you get to the table. We'll see you next time. Bye.
See ya.
Thank you, guys.
Bye.